Well, it was Yes from Viva La Vida, and before that we had A Lover's in Japan from Coldplay. Sorry, Viva La Vida is the name of the album, of course. Look, I'm so delighted because I've got in the studio and I've been chatting while the music's been playing with Michael Barry. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks, Margaret.
Michael, this is your first time, I think, behind the microphone here in this studio.
In this studio it is.
Yeah. Now, you're from St. Vincent de Paul, but we've just been chatting about what a complicated and interesting and deep organisation St. Vincent de Paul is.
From simple things, man seems to be able to make complicated issues from it. So,
they do.
St. Vincent de Paul really started by Frederick Ozanam back in 1833 in Paris.
It's amazing,
so it's
the history.
Come a long way since his load of wood to a widow that was cold.
So he was a university student in Paris.
Yeah.
And tell us the story, man.
Well, he was...
what was his name again, Mike?
Frederick Ozanam.
Frederick Ozanam.
And he got a number of companions together, and he had a real sense of social justice. And, of course, France was in a pretty pitiable state at that time with the wars and so on.
Yeah.
And he came across a nun, Rosalie Rendue, who was a sister of charity.
Right.
And only as a woman could do... She directed him quite specifically where to go and what to do, and so
she knew the need.
She was already working in the slums
of Paris.
Of Paris, yes.
Oh,
so
right.
From that, it developed to an international organisation now right across the world, as we know.
It's incredible.
Totally giving of charity, and St. Vincent de Paul tends to work very quietly and silently behind the scenes, but. Which is a good thing in one sense, because that's part of our philosophy. But on another hand, in this modern world with so much division and chaos, sometimes we need to be out on the front too.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I suppose the public face, I mean, everybody knows about Vinnie's.
Oh, yes. Vinnie's shops. Yeah. That's quite often how people see Vinnie's. And that poses a little bit of a problem at times because the shops now have become very right across the board. All volunteer shops have, you know, really good materials in them. And, of course, the prices are not what they used to be, but they're not like the old second-hand shops you went into and you could smell smelly clothes. I mean, it's like walking into a little, sometimes in cases, like a boutique.
No, they're beautiful.
And that's meant to be because our philosophy is not hand out but hand up.
Mm.
So we value the person coming into the stores or anyone we work with.
Mm.
We basically are walking with them.
Yeah. Well, you can definitely sense that.
Christ-like love,
And you can sense that dignity in the beautiful way secondhand materials. I'm speaking of the shop that I know here in Armidale.
Mm.
Everything is beautifully curated.
It is, yeah.
You know, even if it's some, you know, remnant fabric, it's carefully wrapped and packaged to keep it clean and beautiful. And
And the other thing that people don't see, we've got a Bundara store as well, Bundara Road, which people know, and that's where our office centre is.
Mm-hmm.
But it also is the warehouse for the area region, you know, right out to Moree. And so we collect clothing, and of course some of the clothing is not suitable for sale. Unfortunately people sometimes throw their junk out, so we have to sort that out. That's all baled, and that's usually sent, I think, to India, where it goes from rags to pulled apart and made into material.
Into
again.
New product.
So there's a recycling process. And sometimes Bundara store looks like a shearing shed with all the bales stacked up ready to move out.
That
happens right across the board.
Right, that's amazing. And so we've been talking, we've been waiting for you to come on, Michael, about the different conferences, and there's different geographical areas
are correct.
The one that relates to this broadcast area
is the Armidale region, and that covers Gowra, Yooralla, Armidale and Walker.
Right.
And that has a regional president.
Mm-hmm.
And each of those conferences have, the regional conference has smaller conferences, and they have a president as well. And all the presidents meet every quarter for a report.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm president of St. Augustine's Conference, and our specific role is supporting the Freeman House Drug and Alcohol Rehabilitation Unit here in Armidale.
Now, the Freeman House Drug and Alcohol Rehabilitation Centre is one of the absolute sparkling gems of Armidale that hardly anybody, well, a lot of people do not know about.
Correct.
Mm.
And that's meant to be in some ways because we're dealing with very vulnerable people at a crisis stage of their life, and they're going through rehabilitation.
And that's a big task.
It's a big task. Mm. And we take our hats off to the staff themselves, the case workers. Each client has a case worker as well, and of course there's live-in as well as outreach.
Mm.
And then we also have within the unit having a blank detox unit.
Yeah.
And that's staffed 24 hours by a nurse.
I didn't realise that because I thought that because for people that don't know, if you've got somebody who's alcohol dependent, they can't just suddenly go cold turkey. They need to go through a medical process called detox. And
that's
usually, or in my experience working with people that need a rehabilitation, the step one is to get a referral for a detox,
correct,
which is a medical process.
Correct,
yeah. So Freeman House is doing the detox now?
We've been doing that for some time.
Oh, okay, because it used to be a referral to a hospital bed.
Six beds, I think.
Right.
And we're linked in with the hospital drug and alcohol unit as well.
Right.
Because
it can be quite dangerous medically.
Yes, and that's another reason it's fairly quiet, I suppose.
Mm.
Not giving away any secrets, but it is. The work continues on, and it is a challenging job for the staff. And so our role as conference members is to support them in a pastoral role.
And you're all you conference members, and you're the president of the St. Augustine Freeman House Conference within the broader Armidale, Gyro,
yes,
Urella,
yeah,
Walker Conference. And so you're a volunteer.
Yes.
But you are responsible for hiring people that are paid.
No, I'm not. No. We don't have anything to do with the hire.
That's done separately.
It's hard to explain in a short time, but there's three levels of service. There's the there's an executive officer who is, and a board that responsible for the paid staff. As you can imagine, there's quite a lot of paid staff across New South Wales. A lot of people are quite familiar with the Matt Talbot unit in Sydney.
Matthew Talbot,
and of course, we're linked. That's part of our linkage. Mm.
Yep.
That's quite famous, of course. And then you have the volunteers who, so you have those paid staff, they're covered
separately.
Separately. And then you have the volunteers who someone can walk in off the street and want to volunteer. And most of the volunteers would be working in the shops or sorting materials, for instance. And then you have the conference members, which is the very basic original role of St. Vincent de Paul. That's the powerhouse, I suppose.
Yeah.
So that's the sort of lay Catholic organisation from which it all started.
So this is all part of the kind of somewhat hidden charitable, work of the Catholic Church.
It is, it is.
Mm.
But we don't want to put ourselves sort of up there either.
No.
Salvation Army, Anglicare.
Yeah.
We're all in the same... Yeah, so we're all in the City Mission.
Mm.
The classic case, of course, is the founder of Lifeline. I can't think of his name.
Walker.
Walker.
The Reverend Alan
God
Walker.
God bless him, Alan Walker.
Yeah, long gone now, but extraordinary man.
Purely and simply, an alcoholic man came into Pitt Street and he wanted some help and he didn't know what to do, and there's Lifeline. An incredible organisation. We don't put ourselves higher or anyone else. Mm. It's just an incredible. It's just wonderful.
But I do think the Catholic Church has come in for a bit of bad press in the last few years, and I think it's very I think, this is just my personal opinion, that it's very important, just because people choose to do good works, if you like, you know, undercover, if you like, yes. Or privately, yes. To preserve their own integrity, their own humility, I suppose, really, but also to preserve the privacy and the integrity of the people that they're helping.
And the dignity.
And the dignity, sorry, that's the better word.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, it's important for people outside of that network, whatever denomination it is, to appreciate that there is this vast network of compassion.
And I think because we live in such a pluralistic society now, especially in the Western world, there's always a negativity associated with anything that's giving. You know, people are very questioning of
cynicism
of what people might do. Probably the other very interesting thing with St. Vincent de Paul too, you know, the uniqueness is that each conference has a twin.
And
people say, "Oh, twin, that's interesting."
Yeah.
So we twin with someone that's a conference that's less fortunate than us.
Okay.
So our conference, St. Augustine's conference, we have a twin in India.
Okay.
Yeah. So we support that person in a smaller way, but in a way that they require.
And the St. Augustine Freeman House Conference here is the one that really focuses on that drug and alcohol rehabilitation task. Yeah. Is your twin similarly?
No.
So
no,
they might. No, they're a different.
It could be anyone.
Right.
That usually less fortunate than someone in the Western world. Yeah.
Mm. So that's another level of kind of outreach. So look. I suppose for people that don't know what Freeman House does, perhaps you might just explain a little bit. I mean, it's delicate because the privacy of the people that go to Freeman House is paramount.
Yes, it is. I suppose everyone understands alcoholism. It's a massive problem, especially in our society.
Yep.
And it affects everyone. It affects, you know, young people. You know, we have young people, old people, middle-aged people, all in that bracket. Most of the ones we look after or come to us are in that bracket of quite young or in the middle stage of life. We don't see too many older people, per se. So they can self-refer and they can also be referred by, you know, another organisation. Obviously, we run it 100%. One comes and one goes. We then have a follow.
In other words, you're full all the time.
Yes. So we then have a follow-through as well. And the other thing we have too is a parent set-up as well, so that if a father or a mother comes in and has... It's limited. I think the child can't be older than eight, but if they come in, they...
young children.
We can take some small units for them as well. So
they can actually with their child, with their eight or younger
children. To a degree, until we sort out what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then we have what we call outreach. So we've got key workers that follow through.
Mm.
So when a client leaves, there's a follow-up, as much as they want. I mean, some clients just disappear, and that's their choice, but then there's a follow-up to ensure that, you know, they're staying on track. We have a financial grant of $4 million recently.
Wow. And is that just for the Armidale?
No, it's for the region.
Right.
And it's linked. The financial partner is Armagen. And then there's several other.
So Armagen's the Aboriginal Medical Service. Yep.
Services in the New England.
Mm.
So there's two financial partners, Freeman House and Armagen. Now, to give an example, the conference has nothing to do with the submission for that. That's all a staff matter. That's just to give you an example. But our role ultimately would be to be supporting the families that might have a drug and alcohol person in the family, helping them to support that person in the community. Or whatever else may happen in that outreach program. So the program would have group activities, harm reduction, minimisation, services, recovery, of course, and family support, which I've said before. So our we've been asked as a conference to be ready to look at that family support as a part of the outreach, which is actually very exciting for us.
So that's new. That's a new part of.
Yes. So that will be. Mm. Well, we're going to have some training in being able to work with that with families in September, I think.
Mm.
The program kicks off in July.
Right.
We're already working on that, or the staff are working on that. So Homes North, Drug and Alcohol at the Hospital is involved in it as well.
Mm.
But the two major parties winning the submission was Armagen and...
So that's a collaboration between...
A collaboration, which I think is wonderful.
Fremen House and, yeah.
Yeah, Fremenhouse, yeah.
I mean, it's no secret that the Aboriginal community is, you know, disproportionately hit with alcohol issues and getting good solutions.
Yes. So hopefully that's a $4 million pilot.
Mm. Mm-hmm. It's a pilot.
Over 4 years, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, most of them are pilots.
Yeah.
But then if it's successful, then it usually continues. Mm. But so the hub will be Fremen House. It'll emanate, so the manager will feed out from Fremen House. So we're employing four people for that.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, the manager has been selected from within the team. So a bit playing dominoes, one move, vacant, which is good because that person will be, you know, understands the program and has been initially part of the process and the submission. So that's something really great.
So this is going to fill a gap, I imagine, because you've in the past Fremen House, as far as I understand, has done a brilliant job with the person who's actually got the addiction, but then of course they're part of a family usually, and and that family is obviously going to have been injured by the addicted person's behaviours and just the, you know. And so in the past, I guess, the addicted person was given the assistance, but the family really, there wasn't much, the resourcing, I suppose, to
not
reach out to
the
family.
Resource, yeah. Mm. So that will be good. The person won't just be on his or her own. And we actually do quite a lot of that support. The conference members themselves, directed by the staff, so they'll tell us what they would want as far as support. So we do home visits from that point of view to ensure the person coming out of the program is supported.
Mm.
And we have it sounds very simple, but it's actually brilliant part of pastoral care. We have what we call coffee and cake every Thursday, and it's really a greet and meet with new clients and staff and the conference members themselves. So someone always has to make a cake. I turn up with Tim Tams.
Oh, don't be ashamed. They're a national icon.
They go down very well.
Yes. Actually, the coffee and cake thing is... I remember my sister's in a fairly senior position in the public service, and I said, don't you ever do anything? Because she was always talking, oh, I can't, you know, I've got morning tea and somebody's birthday and we've got cake. And I go, because, I mean, I worked in the small business, you know, family business, and we never had coffee and cake. We didn't have time. Yeah. And I said, don't you ever do anything but have coffee? And she said, oh, you don't understand coffee and cake. It's a fundamental thing of good management.
It is. It is. Yeah, it's always been
and she explained it to me, and I was utterly convinced at the end of it.
It's a good manager's trick, always put a cake on the table on Friday or something.
Or
come back to work on Monday.
Yeah. But, I mean, no, but the function of that is to get people around together and just chatting.
Reacting, interacting, and it's a wonderful way, and it's really truly pastoral care too.
Mm.
One thing about Fremen House, we have a chapel, a beautiful chapel actually,
in the old trim building.
Yeah. And that's allocated to the resident, the clients themselves, or anyone who wants to use it just for quiet time.
Mm.
But it's a prayer space, it's not the typical Catholic chapel, so to speak. But
it's just a space where people can go
and that's good.
For reflection.
I suppose the other thing that's important for us too is we're just starting our annual fundraiser a conference each year does a sleep out.
We've heard of this, yes. And it wouldn't be the first time Community Radio's interviewed people about the sleep out. Tell us a little bit about it, though.
Well, you may have seen recently the big sleep out in Sydney only last week, and they raised, over $1 million.
Is that the executive sleep out?
That's the executive sleep out.
Yeah, we're always
so we
well-heeled individuals on big salaries.
and of course, that's all to do with good public relations over the years. And Matt Talbot is a good example. He's well known in Sydney, even from the racing fraternity. So they've got big players. But we, in our humble little way in Armidale, and it's not only just Armidale, other areas do it as well, but this year we're doing a sleep out. It'll be held on the 30th of August.
Yep.
And we're doing the foot slogging at the moment with the business houses to support it.
Yeah.
And the idea is to have personalities sleep out and rough it, although we don't rough it too much. We're all getting a bit old. But this year we're sleeping out at UNE Sports Union.
Right.
So we're actually undercover, and we've got to be conscious about that as well. But we try to get as many to sleep out as possible to publicise. We have a few keynote speakers during the night to talk about the issues of homelessness, which is a major issue, and that's growing.
Yes, you were mentioning off air, Michael, that all of the different sort of helping agencies are noticing a bit of a change.
Yes, I think it's not quite tangible, but it's certainly on the media. It's very obvious, but it's obviously going to affect all of us as well. You know, the food prices, a good example of that. Rents, etc. You know, school fees. You know, people have still got to live.
Yeah.
So we try to. Yeah, we were conscious of that. See, last year we raised $30,000 in Armidale.
This is with the sleep out.
The sleep out. And every penny of that was spent, but we spent it all by three quarters of the year because the call on it was so heavy. But that was right across New South Wales.
I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, the fact is more people are coming to you and other agencies.
Yes.
And your budgets aren't stretching.
The budgets,
not
budgets
lasting.
Don't match it.
Yep.
So we're having, you know, we're constantly, I mean, the powers that be in St Vincent de Paul are lobbying constantly. So we don't lobby per se. The conferences don't lobby, but our executive personnel lobby for that. We're very conscious of social justice as well. So the sleep out hopefully will raise this year the same amount if we can. And that money then stays in Armidale. That belongs to the conference here in Armidale for us to do our special works.
Yeah, and the special works are largely this drug and alcohol.
All of ours is related to rehabilitation of those that may be leaving Freeman House, accommodation, medical expenses, setting up home with goods and so
on. I think my sort of, you know, limited, but I do have some knowledge of what's actually involved. If a person's been, say, for example, alcohol dependent, they've integrated alcohol into their life and behaviours. Their families have adjusted, usually in a bad way, to it. And so someone presents and says, okay, I want to get free of this addiction. They then have to go through this quite scary medical process of detoxification because of physical detox. Then they've got to go through a program that just deals with a whole lot of emotional, psychological, spiritual.
And that's why each person has his or her own caseworker to help them through that and then follow on.
And then that's quite a protected environment. It's protected in terms of the level of care that's directed to that person, the level of freedom that they have not to necessarily have to go out and earn a living during that period, but just to sort of do reflection. And I mean, I think Freeman House uses the 12 steps program, which has proved to be extraordinarily successful over the world. But then this pinch point comes, which is, okay, I'm through all this. Now I've got to go back into the world where I used to be an alcoholic. That can be quite terrifying.
It can be, and that's really where we come into our own. Is that we follow up. And particularly with this this hub program that we're talking about, is that supporting the families and following up more, there could be quite a considerable amount of work as a result of that in the next 4 years with that program. But hopefully, we pray that it works, because it's a spiritual journey as well.
Of course it is. And I mean, it's pretty easy once a family is sort of separated from their loved one who's got the addiction problem to go, oh, gee, life's so much better without mum or dad or whoever it is. You know, it's easier. We're not having all these crises all the time. It can be pretty hard, I think, to sort of reincorporate mum or dad or whoever it is back into the family. And it can, and so this is where this hub thing is.
Yeah, in some cases it'll be easier than others, like anything else, because we've all got different personalities, and it's just working on each case as it comes up. It's I think it's a very humbling that we, you know, that we can actually. I always refer to it as walking beside the person, as a brother or a sister. You're not leading or pushing, you're just walking beside them, and we all have our moments of ups and downs, and who am I to say I haven't had a few slips and falls and
of course
skins. But by our experience, and I did 5 years on Lifeline, so it was a very humbling for me to do that. I had the intention. In my background, I was a nurse, educator and administrator, and I thought, I can handle this. You know, I soon realised it was much tougher than you thought.
Yeah.
So it was a great humbling learning curve for me, those 5 years, but it was incredible. It sort of helped me in my latter stage of life, I suppose, coping with my own issues, because we all have them.
Yeah, of course.
And, you'd be...
Oh, it's amazing. And, well, there's so much to it, but we're almost out of time. But Michael, I'm really hoping you can come in again down the track and let us know.
I certainly would like to, Margaret. I think, because without sort of giving away trade secrets, so to speak, but it's a stage in life where we need to be able to be open and talk to people about this. So, it's a bit like introducing yourself, you know. Nothing worse than someone shakes your hand and they don't introduce themselves, and you're trying to think, you know, half an hour, who are you? Where did you come from?
Oh, yeah. Well, look, there's a lot coming up, and there's a lot more to what is happening. And I think that our listeners, you know, we're all hearing all the time about the cost of living crisis.
Yes.
But how we as a whole community work together to kind of deal with that and look after each other is probably, you know, it's not exactly an upside, but it's a challenge, isn't it, for our whole community?
It is a challenge. And
we all need to know what's going on.
That's right. And I think that's one of the big pluses in Armidale, but it's also our Achilles heel a little bit. We don't really... I keep raising this. We all know different things, like the hub in Beardy Street has been a great invention, incentive.
Yeah,
it has showers and washing machines and so on there for homeless people, and it's got a whole lot of services all in one place, a one-stop shop.
Yeah, that's the hub that used to be the old Centrelink.
That's correct.
Building opposite the big Woolworths Centro-y sort of place. Yep.
We still don't, like, this is a good example, the program linked with Armagen and the other organisations. But we still don't, I don't know how you ever actually get everything together in one place. We all work well together, but it's amazing when you walk around, oh, I didn't know that you were here, and so on and so on. Especially things like disability support.
That's right.
Which is, sort of a big area too. That's another time, that one.
Oh, well, I'm
very... that's not on my agenda at this moment.
Well, I'm very much looking forward to hearing more, and particularly how the new program with Armagen goes and how that... Because that would be a big gap, I would imagine, that you're now going to be able to address.
Well, just the fact that the staff were successful in getting the submission means that there's a need there. So let's hope and pray that we actually fill the need as much as we can. We'll never fill it completely, but... it's a start.
I think if you do enough to help people, you know, so it's about recovery. I mean, there's some,
yes.
and helping people to kind of find a new normal. It's a healthier normal and get back on their feet.
True.
That's a wonderful thing. Thank you so much for coming in, Michael.
Well, thank you, Margaret. I really appreciated that and the opportunity just to explain a few things.
Oh, well, there'll be a bit more. And for people who've got their diaries out, we are going to talk a bit more about what's on. Haven't got there yet because the morning's just flown.
Yes.
But notwithstanding that, just bear in mind that you're keen for anybody and everybody, but particularly executives or people with a bit of, you know, habituation to luxury perhaps or, you know, being well-heeled would come on this sleep out journey. Yeah,
exactly.
So we'll hear more about that we move towards August. But stick it in your diary, everybody. 30th of August down at the Sports Centre at UNE.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Here's going.
Thanks you so much, Michael. All the best.